Hi, listeners. I want to tell you about a cause that I'm involved with at Heritage Radio Network. HRN is celebrating its 15th year, and to celebrate, we're deepening our commitment to giving voice to the next generation of food system storytellers, and we need your help. Our internship and fellowship programs help activate new possibilities for underrepresented and underestimated young people through experiential journalism, audio engineering, and production training. Through these unique programs, HRN helps food equity stewards build essential workforce readiness skills that expand their potential and foster economic mobility. Please consider supporting these critical programs. And with a minimum donation, you can be entered to win a dinner for two at an amazing restaurant in one of eight cities and tickets to a concert at a great venue in one of those cities. We have incredible partners across the country who have donated, as they also share our passion for helping to educate the next generation of food system storytellers. Check out heritageradionetwork.org/15 to donate and enter to win today. That's heritageradionetwork.org/15 to donate and enter to win today. And make sure you donate before March 31st. Thank you.
Hey everyone, it's Cam Hurt, host of the Best Show Ever podcast, and we have got a second season coming out very soon that I am very excited about. We've got some very cool special guests, including musical acts that we all love, like Karina Reichman, Daniel Donato, Jake Brownstein from Eggy, Rick and Peter from Goose, and many more. Tune in for new episodes dropping on Osiris Media March 5th on the Best Show Ever podcast.
Osiris.
Hey everybody, this is The Drop. Welcome back. My name's RJ. This is part four of our mini-series from An Afternoon with Osiris we did at the Ardmore Music Hall. I just want to say thank you to the Ardmore Music Hall. They were so great, so accommodating, and really made for what a lot of people describe to me as a really magical afternoon, which is a nice thing to hear after you put a lot of effort into an event like this. Like I said in the last episode, we're going to be doing more of these. If you have ideas for musicians or ideas that you want to communicate to us, please send us messages, email, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Today, we're going to bring you our last interview that we did that afternoon. Matt and I got to talk to Mark Brownstein of the Disco Biscuits. I'm sure most of you know Mark. He has a great story. We got into some pretty interesting topics here. And then you'll hear Mark play a couple songs with Feel Free, which turned into quite an awesome little improv session with some of the other musicians. So I don't want to spoil it too much. I'm just going to let you all listen to it and really hope you enjoy it. So I guess this is our last guest.
Ever.
Wow. I hope it's... man. We spend months planning something like this and then it's... you're like, shit, it's almost over.
It's like your wedding. It just goes by in a flash.
It reminds me of my wedding a lot, mostly with the Supertramp songs. God. I didn't mean that play on words. That was interpreted by someone else. I meant the jams, guys. You guys doing all right? Can you guys endure a little more conversation and maybe some more tunes? All right. I got one scream and one thumbs up, so I think we're going to do it.
It's a
we're going to bring up our friend and collaborator, Mark Brownstein. Philly zone again. At least you're Philly zone now, wouldn't you say, Mark?
Philly's adoptive son.
Yeah. Yes. Hey, Mark.
Yes, Philly zone.
Mark.
How's it going? How's everybody doing here? Hi. That was really something there with Aaron and the Goodbye Stranger, huh? How do you follow that kind of a performance?
We're going to find out.
All right.
Hey, Mark. Welcome.
This is a straight mic stand, so maybe I'm going to...
You can take it out, I think. Yeah,
I'm going to go for that.
Okay. So, Mark, first of all, thank you for being here.
It's my pleasure.
I said at the beginning that I reached out to you, and I was like, hey, you want to do this thing? I think it's going to be awesome. And you were like, dude, I'm in.
Yeah,
I appreciate it.
There's a reason that happened is because... for most of my career, people would reach out to me and say, hey, do you want to do this thing? And my automatic response would be no. Instantaneously, always, I would say no. I wouldn't even think about it. It was like a knee-jerk response to just say no to everything. And then I realized that I was giving up a lot of great opportunities. And I felt like maybe it was like I was like letting fear rule me, and I just made a policy about, I don't know, about 5 years ago, that I was going to just, no matter what it was, if somebody wanted to have me out for whatever it was, I was going to say yes. And I've started just knee-jerk saying yes to everything, for better or for worse.
Yeah,
this is for better, for better. And some, most of them turn out great. And so many incredible experiences have come out of changing that one little aspect of my life.
Do you think that saying no was it out of fear?
Oh, yeah, of course, 100%. Yeah, it was like, you know, I feel comfortable in the setting of the Disco Biscuits,
yeah.
And people would like invite me to come out and play in jam sessions or whatever it was. And I feel like that would maybe like, I don't know, just put me in a less comfortable, you know, position. And I have anxiety and I didn't want to have to go through that all the time. So
yeah.
I would just say no. And it was an easy way to just prevent having to like face those fears. But you know, again, like saying yes, it's changed my life. Here we are together.
Here
Look
we are.
This.
And you told me earlier that you're feeling comfortable. Like when you go to do stuff, even if you're not fully, like it's not your thing that you do all the time. So it seems like that's flipped a switch.
Yeah, it has completely flipped around to where now I can just relax and enjoy things. But yeah, that took a couple of years though,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
One of the things that happens backstage that you don't know about possibly is that everybody asks each other if they're nervous before coming out and talking in front of people. Because talking in front of people, if you've never done it before, it, you know, people shake. You see it at weddings when people have to give speeches and stuff. It's an experience to be in front of people. And you know, getting on stage and playing music, it's hard for a lot of people, you know. It's there's you hear stories of musicians who suffer from anxiety who go through like this struggle to perform all the time, you know. I got over that. Yeah, I used to get nervous like crazy, but I'm over it now. I just enjoy seeing people,
you
know?
So
hi everybody.
So Mark, we're gonna get to music, but I have to ask you the burning question on everybody who follows you on social media's mind. I worked in the tech industry before I came to Osiris for 15 years. I've designed software systems for Fortune 500 companies. I do not understand the NFT thing. So explain it. Help me understand.
Upstairs, I was like, this is about to turn into a tech podcast here. This is something that... I got into, well, let's just back up. In March of 2020, the music industry shut down, right? And so, first of all, that accelerated what you're seeing with NFTs and the blockchain, and we'll get to what they are in a second. But that the process of all of these creative people immediately being out of work all at the same time and not knowing exactly what was going to happen, it gave birth to a lot of different innovations. So on the second day of the pandemic, I was in my office and I thought to myself, what the hell am I going to do for the next 2 years? And I had an idea that this was going to be like a 2-year thing at that time. And I was like, maybe I could teach. I've never taught before. Maybe I can teach. And then my brain started going in a direction of how many students could I get? Like how much, what like could I, is this even something that's sustainable? Would other people want to do this? And like very quickly I moved into like, does this scale? Which is something that I'm on the board. I was the founder and am on the board of directors of Headcount with Peter Shapiro is on the board of directors of Headcount. And in every meeting for 15 years that we've had, if anybody ever has an idea, Peter, first thing he does is he says, does this scale? So I said that to myself in his voice. I was like, does this scale? And I called a friend and asked if they wanted to start a website. And we started a website to help musicians connect, freshly out of work musicians connect with their fans. It was called Live Lesson Masters at the time. And within a couple months, we changed it, the name of the company, to Lively. And we had a very, very successful first year and a half where we had helped over like 100 musicians earn, you know, somewhere in the range of like $600,000 and $700,000 over that first like 9-month period. And
it's pretty, but it's amazing because I run a business. We've talked about this a lot. It takes
we're
a
neighbors,
lot,
by the way.
It takes a lot to just be to put it on the line and say, you know what, I'm going to start this thing. And man, super happy and proud that you were able to just like turn it into a thing, because it's like every entrepreneurship podcast or whatever, it's like you found a need in the market and you were the first one there. That's pretty cool.
Thank you. Yeah. One thing that we do is we have a lot of ideas, and like a different thing that we do is we like act on all of them. Like in the Disco Biscuits world, like in our little world of musicians and friends, like so many companies have been born out of it, you know, Headcount, Splice, you know, Lively, Camp Bisco, yeah, and Holidays. And there's been so many other creative, like entrepreneurial things, that Group Me,
yeah,
that have come out of our little scene of friends and, entrepreneurs. When we have an idea, we just kind of like, we call all of our entrepreneur friends and see what they think. And, you know, in this case, I found somebody who was like, I love your idea. I want to be your partner.
Yep.
So that was on a Wednesday night. It was March 18th of 2020, Wednesday night. And we started building it the next morning. And 5 days later, we launched this thing. And I didn't know what I was doing, but now I've got, within like a couple of weeks, people were like, it's coming at us to give us money. And so now we took on investors. So now I'm a tech entrepreneur. So that's how, this is how every interview now turns into. So because once you have investors, now you really have like the accountability of like trying to make this thing
work.
But
most of these people are Osiris investors.
We
have,
hey, how's it going? Nice understand. To meet you. How's everybody doing? So we're on the same investment raising schedule. We know. So
when you go in the NFT thing, tell us how you're bringing it to music fans.
Okay, so
think that's like
why people ask me what am I doing or why am I doing it, and the answer is that I am the chief creative officer of a company, and as part of my job, I was told to go figure this out, you know, like go figure out what's going on with NFTs, go figure out what's going on with the blockchain. There's somebody that we had a meeting with was like, this is the future of the music industry. And I was like, And then I wanted to figure out why they thought with such conviction that this thing that nobody understands could possibly be the future of the music industry and every industry, is what they were saying. So I took the 6 months to try to figure it out. And the short story is, on like the collectible side, which is the NFT, like, you know, art collectibles that people are trading as like their stocks, they're like they're inflationary assets. People are like making hugely risky bets buying art that they hope is going to get be worth more money. That is like buying baseball cards, right? It's like digital collectibles. It's basically like baseball cards. I still have all my baseball cards from 1984 to 1987. But the, underneath that, there's this technology that essentially it just records ownership of digital items, right? And also then there's crossover into the real world. And so there's a lot of people out there that are making a bet that anything that needs authentication, like a really nice pair of sneakers that might be forged, you know, anything that could be forged that there are actually authentic versions of in real life, ultimately there will be, instead of it just being a record with a stamp on it, there will be a digital record of that on the blockchain. So shoes or watches or houses, anything with a deed or a title, cars, that ultimately you'll be able to just make records of that on the blockchain. And the blockchain is just a series of computers. That's all it is. It's just like it's like an advanced version of the internet. It's a series of computers that's making transactions happen.
Yeah. And you guys recently, though, the Disco Biscuits, you guys rolled out a program or an initiative, I guess, where you're basically offering people the opportunity to buy some of those NFTs, but also get really cool in-person benefits, which seems like you're bringing music fans into this like future world.
Yeah. So I did an interview yesterday with somebody from like the blockchain world, and they said they felt like the Disco Biscuits were the first major band that has a big fan base that successfully entered into this world. And didn't receive a lot of backlash, and just had we did an NFT drop last week, and we had three tiers of it. It sold out. We partnered with an artist that's a big fan of the Biscuits that we didn't know, but we're big fans of him as an artist as well, who's a native in the crypto and NFT world. And we put together packages, and basically all we did, what we were selling was a nice piece of art that had a loop of music. And then what came with it was a show that we, last year we played a bunch of shows here. And then right on the tail of that, we went into a warehouse in Philly and recorded a bunch of unreleased shows. We recorded three sets of music, and we've been sitting on it, and we actually released that as the benefit to the NFT. So you buy the NFT, what you're really buying is a stream of a show that we recorded last year. But then we made another tier, and we added in Biscuits tickets. So people, if you bought that NFT, then that comes with a ticket to a Disco Biscuit show in real life. And that one sold out instantaneously, which was showed us was the thing that people are valuing still the most in these sales was the experience that they come for, which is seeing the band in real life. And then there was a one that was just a one of one, only one person can buy it, and we put it on for an auction. And that came with a bunch of different things. One of them is the presidential box for the New Year's run, two nights of a VIP box at New Year's, plus a ticket to every single Disco Biscuit show in the year 2022, the golden ticket, and plus you get to go on Lively with me and write one of the sets for the New Year's show. So, you know, you come on and meet with me and we go through the process of writing a Disco Biscuit set. I'll show them kind of how we construct it and then let them do that process and write their own set, which to me, that seemed like the coolest part of it. Yeah. And that actually ended up auctioning off for $6,300. It was
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was a pretty cool experience. Anyway, that's the NFT portion. I promise not to bore you anymore with tech talk.
But I think
if you are an investor, just
but it's a way to bring fans in and create revenue for you guys who aren't like, you know, and everyone else who's involved. I mean, it's a cool idea.
Well, if you look at like the most famous NFT project is called the Bored Ape Yacht Club, and maybe you've heard of it, like Jimmy Fallon has a Bored Ape, and like all these like Post Malone, all these like famous like people are going out and buying this JPEGs for $250,000, $500,000.
Matt bought one yesterday.
I did. Yeah. I right clicked and then
right click saved. So and it's like why would they do that? But like then there's like these parties that they're throwing. I don't know if it's a $200,000 party personally. You know what I mean? But like they're throwing these very exclusive parties around the country in New York City, and they're building a club that you have to be a holder of this to go into. And so you can see like it's working for them. Yeah. Right, they're valuable. There are people out there who are buying that, whether you think it's stupid or I think it's stupid or whatever. But it's not about that or their art or their party. I know we got to move. Right?
No. I don't know.
Do we got to move?
Well, I just realized that maybe we
the
do.
But this is a new VIP experience. It's about how does this apply to other, you know, to other things, right? You know, how can the Disco Biscuits use this technology to interact with our fans in new ways in the future?
Yeah.
I guess one last question maybe. And this is your question, so I'm stealing
it. Oh, we didn't kill it all on NFTs. I've got so many important things.
I think there are still people there.
Yeah, everybody's here.
And most people have left.
I begged them not to talk about NFTs. I promise you that. I was like, please don't bore these people. Nobody fucking cares. I promise you.
So I do want to, the hot topic, I'll give you a little bit inside info. The hot topic up in the green room is the Beatles Get Back documentary. Ooh. Which there's just a lot of discussion on, and you're in the middle of it, so maybe you just tell us.
No spoilers.
No spoilers, but like what you were.
They stay together.
You were very passionate talking about upstairs. What?
It's just has anybody seen this documentary? Okay. I don't want to screw it up. Has anybody not seen it that doesn't want me to talk about it? Do you mind if I say
just
a couple? I'm just going to say
just
a couple
our
things.
Two friends.
It's really, really, really powerful to get to watch this band that, you know, he didn't ask me how I got into music, you know, how I got into music was like, you know, John Lennon got shot when I was 7 years old in New York City, and I was living in New York City at the time, and people poured into the streets, and it was like, what is going on here?
Yeah.
And it made me curious about what was so powerful about this John Lennon person that people were just freaking out in the streets. It was, and that's what got me into music. I got a book about the Beatles. Wow. And sat down at the piano and started learning Beatles songs. To this day, I can play like 15 Beatles songs. It's the only thing I can do on piano still to this day. I have a medley. You know, you hear so many things about the Beatles and what it was like and what the dynamic was like, and getting to actually see what the dynamic was like and see what was going on. If you've seen it, the first episode was very, very dark. It was very hard to watch as somebody that's been in a band for 25 years. It touched a little bit too close to home. Having four people figure out how to do something creatively, and like you don't have words for what you want. You're like, no, the thing needs to happen there, and then it's just got to be a little bit more like this, you know. And you're like, well, I don't know what you want me to do, you know. And seeing Paul kind of push his ideas so hard, and seeing John just sit there. It was really, really intense, man. And I've just gotten to the part where Billy Preston put a little bit of a lift into the band. And
Do you mentioned close to home, but what Matt has said when I talked to him about it is that, like, that's how every band rehearsal is. It's like that. I mean, in terms of the joking and the bullshitting and the, like, kind of fucking with each other.
Yeah, I think every, like, kind of shitty thing that a member of the Beatles does, in that, like, everybody in a band has done that at some point. The guy who's not really into the song that you're playing, the guy who wants to just play some goofy cover and is, like, taking the band off track. Like, it's all there for everybody to see, and it's the Beatles, right?
Yeah, I mean, it was really jarring to see. Like, it was like, wow, these human beings were, you know, trying to hold it together here. And I, you know, one thing I said was it felt like they were very aware of the cameras in this first episode, and that maybe that changed even the way that they were acting a little bit. And as the episodes progress, you can sense that they're becoming more comfortable and maybe not paying as much attention.
Yeah.
So as soon as this is over, I'll be heading home to watch the end of episode 2 and all of episode 3.
All right, we're going to get Mark up here to play some music. I want to ask one more question, which is, you guys are almost 30 years as a band, the Disco Biscuits, which is insane and that's awesome.
That can't possibly be true. How long were the Beatles together for? 9 years?
Yeah.
It's truly remarkable.
What's it like now, especially after the pandemic, in the midst of the pandemic, getting back with your bandmates and playing live shows, first at drive-ins and now mostly outdoor shows, but now you're playing indoor shows as well. Like, what's it like coming back?
Yeah, I mean, it's been cathartic, you know. You not having something that's such a deep part of your identity just kind of ripped away from you, and with no idea how it's ever going to be put back together, and then trying to get creative to put it together. And the drive-ins were cool, but it wasn't really, you know, it was like the first drive-in where everybody was like, "Fuck it, we're just going for it." And I think that was in Sussex, New Jersey earlier this year. And the whole crowd just came up front and it was like, whoa, there's a crowd here. It's, you know, the experience of being on stage with a group of 1,000 or several thousand people that are that, you know, in tune with you and that locked in and throwing that much energy. It's really, really, really special. It's really powerful. And you know, I get the hair stands up on my body. I get chills all the time just from that exchange of energy between the crowd and like when things are really clicking. I said I would never take it for granted again. You know what I mean? So I have to live up to that. Like, I was like sitting at home and I was like, I will never ever take for granted going on tour or being in a band or playing a live show again. And that's, you know, I think from both the fans and the musicians, that's the vibe out there right now.
Cool, let's get to it.
Let's do it.
Let's do some more music.
Mark's going to play a couple songs with our friends from Feel Free. Mark, thank you for taking time to hang out with us.
Thank you so much. Thank you both. Thank all of you.
Make some noise for the Disco Biscuits tonight, y'all. We wouldn't be here without them. Thank y'all so much. Thank you.
We'll be right back.
and the prophets, and be careful what you wish. Never had to think twice, always knew my home was in paradise. Never had a home like this, and the prophets, and be careful what you wish. Never had to think twice, always knew my home was in paradise. Never had a home like this, and the prophets, and be careful what you wish. Never had to think twice, always knew my home was in paradise. Never had a home like this, and the prophets, and be careful what you wanna wish. You wish. Never had to think twice, always knew my home was in paradise.
I promise you, super duper. Was it duper? Thank you, everybody, for coming. Thank you, Feel Free. Thank you to Charlie, Mark, Aaron, Anthony.
Thank you so much to all the incredible musicians. One thing that takeaway for me is that musicians are incredibly interesting. Without fail, like, they play really well, but they also speak about incredibly interesting things. And we're going to do this afternoon with Osiris Moore because there's a lot to dig into here. But I really want to say, this band, Feel Free, I mean, they're incredible. They were the backbone of tonight, and they're trying to move from Virginia to become also a Philly band. And let's do our part and help them get there. Thank you. Thank you, everybody.
Just before we end, I just want to say quickly, I mentioned at the very beginning that Andrew and I started talking about this idea, I don't know, 6 months ago maybe, and we were like, three? Wow. Okay, we pulled this together pretty quickly. We were like, I think if we get a bunch of people up here and talk to them and then they play songs and they all play together, it's going to work out somehow. And 15 minutes before it started, everyone was like, so what's going to happen when we all jam together? And you guys saw what happened, which was fucking amazing. Really, really, really incredible. But you were not nervous to come up and join the jam and stretch out Home Again into a blues jam for 17 minutes. Pretty amazing. I just want to say thank you to all of you guys for putting in the time and effort to do this, and to the Ardmore Music Hall, and to you guys for coming. Thank you so much. Wow, what a thrill. All right, everyone. Thank you so much for listening. Hope you enjoyed that that conversation with Brownie and those songs. What you heard toward the end there, after the Home Again song proper ended, Anthony Crizon just kind of came up and got back on the guitar, and Charlie Hall got on the triangle, and we brought everyone up for a jam. I thought the jam was just really, really cool that came out of that, so really hope you all enjoy it. And thanks again to our house band Feel Free, and to Magner and Brownie and Charlie and Anthony and to Tom and Matt for co-hosting with me. It was such a wonderful afternoon, and we're looking forward to doing this again. We hope you enjoyed this little series on The Drop, and please send us comments and feedback and thoughts. We always want to hear from you, and I'll leave it there. You'll hear from Brian next. Brian and Dave will be back with the next episode, but I had fun being here with you. Really hope you enjoyed the audio from this event, and we'll see you out there. Peace.
Osiris. This is the story of Whitney Houston.
This is the story of Kurt Cobain.
Of George Michael, of Otis Redding, of Amy Winehouse, of Michael Hutchence, Bob Marley. This is the story of Prince.
It's a new podcast series
about how they died, why they died, and why we're still talking about them so long after.
It's like nothing you've ever heard before.
It's storytelling.
But it's more than that, because rock stars,
they tell us how we feel. They change our mood.
They change the clothes we wear, the people we hang out with,
the way we remember things.
It's them who give us those ludicrous moments, the ones where you're
jumping around, singing your heart out, feeling understood.
And it's those moments we'll help you remember, the ones you're thinking about right now.
That feeling.
That feeling.
It's coming soon from Crowd Network.
Just search for Death of a Rockstar on your podcast app.
And subscribe now.
What's up, everybody? I am Finn McKenty, host of the Punk Rock NBA podcast, part of the Sound Talent Media podcast network. My podcast is all about doing what you love for a living, and every week I sit down and talk to people who have done exactly that. For example, musicians like Tommy from Between the Buried and Me, Matt from Periphery, Lil Lotus and Shinigami, among many others, photographers, artists, designers, YouTubers like Glenn Fricker and Sarah Dici, and I unpack exactly how they got to where they are today with the goal of helping you do the same. So if that sounds cool, you can listen and subscribe at soundtalentmedia.com, and I'll see you there.